You are listening to John Diard's Life Spa, your premier source for health news and Ayurveda, where modern science meets ancient wisdom.
Welcome to our podcast tonight. It's called Harnessing Happiness. I hope you all enjoy this podcast tonight. It's really all about how we can find and access the joy within ourselves. And just a quick note, our upcoming podcasts, and don't miss our next live one, which is Say Goodbye to Aches and Pains. And that's on February 8th of this year. So don't miss that one. A lot of great information to share about how to get rid of your aches and pains. Let's talk about harnessing happiness and what that really means. You know, there's lots of really interesting research that I've written about a lot over the years and have dug up for this podcast. In that laughter, for example, in one study, they found that laughter in a positive mood, for example, shows that it actually boosts immunity. It actually boosts salivary immunoglobulins in your mouth when you laugh. That actually support immune, which is your first defense against a cold or flu, which is all about a positive mood. They also did another study. I was going to read a couple of these just to kind of introduce this concept that a positive mood and happiness really makes a difference in your physiology. It really does make a difference, and it's well documented. Positive emotions, for example, showed that there is a significant reduction in readmission rates in hospital. If people have a more positive attitude, they don't go back into the hospital as much as they should. And it's actually, they actually say that it's a better measure of readmission than the more standard things like how quickly you were released or how long you were supposed to stay in the hospital or how well you adjusted to the hospital. They say happiness and your mood is the number one predictor for if you're going to actually get readmitted. People who are optimistic or happy or laugh have significantly better recovery rates from heart disease. Another interesting thing is when you actually share your emotions and share your feelings, counting your blessings. In one study, they had people list or count their blessings and write them down for 10 weeks. And the people who actually were able to do that had better subjective health outcomes, including fewer physical complaints, less pain and aches and pains, more time they had available or were willing to spend more time exercising, better quality of sleep and more hours of sleep, which was really interesting. And even when they experienced or expressed a sentiment of gratitude, something that I believe is so important, a big part of our transformation awareness and meditation technique is understanding really what gratitude is. We'll talk about that. That also showed to have significant health benefits, and we just kind of allow ourselves to be grateful for what we have. Sort of really interesting stuff. Journaling, writing down your experiences. If you have a negative, stressful event that happened in your life and you journal about it, but in a positive way and use more positive words when you journal, that the people were able to get through traumas better, were able to process death better, and really traumatic emotional experiences when they actually use more positive words in their journaling, which I thought was pretty interesting. Other studies found that emotional disclosure, you know, whether it be writing, journaling, talking to a loved one, has been shown to, you know, been shown to increase longevity, in fact. And another study, joy and happiness were expected to lower sickness, decrease stress rates, and increase longevity in a couple of different studies. So there's a lot of studies. I'm going to talk about how all this works, possibly. Another study, elderly adults who have positive attitude were more protected against physical disability than those with negative attitudes, okay? People with AIDS who had a positive attitude were able to actually had lower mortality rates than the folks who had a negative attitude. Really interesting information. So, and in one study that I thought was really interesting was when people wrote love letters to a loved one, someone they cared about, that it actually lowered their cholesterol and lowered their blood pressure. And when they spent time with people that they loved and cared for, it also lowered their blood pressure. So somehow, when we are laughing and joyful, we feel safe. And when we feel safe, we take a risk to what I like to say, to open up the very delicate petals of your flower and let something more truthful out. Let, you know, that those protective emotions sort of be exposed. And this is interesting because as young children, we're hardwired to really want the approval from mom and dad in order to be safe and secure, to actually have the species survive. And if we didn't care if mom and dad were watching over us and just did whatever we wanted to, wandered in the jungle, we would probably get eaten by lions and there would be no people anywhere. So we had this hardwired genetic thing to sort of keep an eye out for mom and dad and do stuff that they want to kind of keep an eye on us. And that keeps the species safe. Well, this is a very important program. It's a reward chemistry program driven by a hormone called dopamine, which supports this reward chemistry. The problem is that we really, as adults, and particularly in our culture, which is full of rewards, sensory stimulation, we never shake the reward chemistry. Now, traditional cultures had a thing called rites of passage, where they would do sometimes really crazy things. Young men, young women would do really, you know, sometimes risky things to kind of, you know, proclaim themselves or be proclaimed as an adult. And at that point, they would stop needing or getting the approval of mom and dad. They were free to be them, to do them fully. Now, in our culture, most of those rites of passages are gone. And most of us never really get the message to free ourselves from this need of approval. We just replace mom and dad with other sorts of approval, whether it be toys or a girlfriend or a boyfriend or a cup of coffee, which is a stimulant, which is sugar, shopping. As you all know, there were those really amazing studies when people go shopping as they're looking at shoes. Their dopamine levels start to rise, and as they're selecting and going through and trying on different shoes, the dopamine levels rise a little higher and a little higher and a little higher. And then all of a sudden, when they finally decide on the shoe that they absolutely love, that will, of course, change their world, and they swipe the card, the dopamine levels literally crash, and now they're completely depleted again. And the brain feels really depleted, and now it wants to pull down the menu and look for another reward. Because that's what we're about, is the reward chemistry. And the brain quickly realizes that, I passed a Cinnabon, I passed a Starbucks, I passed a Mrs. Fields chocolate chip cookie, and instantly you just kind of spew out, boy, wouldn't you like a Cinnabon or a cup of coffee? And next thing you know, you're all headed towards the next Mrs. Fields chocolate chip cookie, and dopamine levels start to rise again. And it starts to rise again. And we get happy as they rise, but we get sad when they fall. And the problem is most of us are living on a roller coaster ride. We're happy on the way up and we're sad on the way down. And most of us spend most of our time on the way to getting happy or on the way to getting sad, but never very little time spending actually at the very tip where we're actually happy. And what if we could spend a life that was actually happy all the time? I mean, it sounds crazy and maybe unrealistic, but what we're really doing now is we've got this roller coaster ride of sugar and coffee and stimulants and Red Bull and all these kind of very exciting sensory stimuli that we have in our culture drive us to get happy, and then we sort of crash, and then our brain thinks, where's the next stimulus gonna come from? Where's the next movie? Where's the next video game? Where's the next dark chocolate? When do I go shopping again? When can I go work out? When's my next yoga class? You know, a lot of times, a lot of good things that we do also provide reward. And it's a really slippery slope because a big part of that reward chemistry is all about who we are. If we didn't have that reward chemistry, the dopamine, we wouldn't have buildings, computers. I wouldn't be talking to you today. So much of that was about that dopamine and that reward chemistry is so much a part of our drive. But it has to be in balance with this ability to be silent. Now, in Ayurveda, they talk about this as what's called the coexistence of opposites, the ability to be dynamically active in the world, making things happen, but also deeply calm and composed at the same time. So it's the, I call it the eye of the hurricane effect. The bigger the eye, the calm, the more powerful the wind. So ideally, if you had a bigger calm, you could be more productive. You could be more powerful. Not for the sake of being powerful, because it's just our nature. If we balance it, there's unlimited potential in this human condition thing that we have. So the idea is that if we can create this inner experience of composure and calm, we can build the winds of activity and productivity and stimulus around this experience of silence. So we have the two opposites coexisting. And there's many ways to accomplish this. And this was my very first book called Body Mind Sport. I wrote it way back in the 80s. And it was all about nasal breathing exercise. And we did research on this, which we published in the International Journal of Neuroscience. And we found that when people breathe through their nose, which drives air through the nose all the way down to the lower lobes of your lungs, where the calm nerves are. And if you saw a bear in the woods, you take an upper gasping breath, triggering an emergency response, telling your body, life's an emergency, there's a bear chasing me, get up a tree, save my life. And that is a very stressful event. And it can wear you out and deplete you and exhaust you. If you're addicted to reward chemistry, one reward after another reward after another reward, it can deplete you and exhaust you. So now, not only do we like the reward, we really desperately need another stimulation of some sort, more shopping, more coffee, more Coke, more sugar, more whatever, to get us out of that sort of exhausted hole to feel human, normal again. So we have this sort of roller coaster ride that begins to take place. We're kind of using stimulants to get ourselves out of that hole. So what we found was that when people breathe through their mouth, they create this emergency chemistry that depletes and exhausts you. But when you breathe through your nose, it creates a parasympathetic activation, a calm nervous system. In fact, the brains went into an alpha state. They went into a meditative calm. While these kids were running as fast as they could, their brains were in a meditative state. That was the coexistence of opposites. Dynamic activity and composure and calm experienced at the same time. And I was in search of, when I did the research, the runner's high, the zone, that euphoric experience athletes have when they say my best race was my easiest race. I was after that. I wanted to find that. And what I stumbled upon was something even more profound, that we also noticed that the parasympathetic nervous system, when you're under a lot of stress, goes to zero. And the fighter, that's the calm one. And that makes you digest better, too. And the fight or flight nervous system maxes out when you're under stress. So when you're in exercise stress, fight or flight goes up, parasympathetic goes down. You just completely, they're opposites. In our study, when they breathe through the nose, which is a calming experience, the fight or flight only went halfway and the parasympathetic went up. So the two opposite nervous systems coexisted. Between that and the brainwave activation, what we found was that we can actually create this thing called the coexistence of opposites. That's the balance between the dopamine hormone, the reward chemistry, which we need to stimulate us to make stuff happen, but we've overshot that runway. We've gotten, in a way, super addicted to those hormones. And as a result, our happiness is completely hooked to those rewards. And if we don't get the reward by something, so we don't make the money or make the deal or buy the car or get that big house, we find ourselves depressed. And we have more depression, and as you know, in our country than ever before. We have obesity levels that are higher than ever before. When the body is under a lot of stress from stressing and stimulating and stimulating and stimulating and crashing and stimulating and crashing to get the reward, that stress is a fat-storing, sugar-burning, disease-producing chemistry. And we want to break that. So to really truly find our happiness, we have to break the reward chemistry bonds. We have to find a way to become more self-aware of how we engage in behaviors that are stimulating ourselves to get us temporary doses of happiness as opposed to something that I like to call joy. Joy is sort of for no reason. You just are joyful, you know. Happiness sometimes happens when good things happen, you know. Your happiness is based on what's happening. Stocks go up, you're happy. Stocks go down, you're unhappy. You know, you watch CNN, you get unhappy. You watch the news, you get unhappy. Because we are, believe it or not, there's an old Vedic saying that says, what you see, you become. And we now know, we have good science to prove that, that what you see and expose yourselves to your senses, particularly visually on TV or what you hear, directly affects who you become. It affects, in a very intimate way, your microbiology, which makes up 90% of the cells in your human body. And if you stress them out, those microbes get super stressed out in your gut. They send a message through the gut-brain axis to your brain, and the brain goes, whoa, there's a bear coming, there's a bear chasing me, this is stressful, so I need to store some fat, crave some sugar, and tell everybody in this little human planet of mine that life's an emergency, and get stressed out. And that accelerates aging, accelerates the disease process, and is something that we are beginning to see more and more of. A lot of chronic degenerative diseases. Luckily, we have a lot of medicines, sort of band-aids, that patch people up, so they're sort of living longer, but it's like what we call dependent longevity. People are living longer, but they're dependent on medicines. They're not feeling wonderful. They're living sort of not a wonderful long life. They're living a longer life, but you know, not what we would call harnessing happiness, okay? So the other hormone, as you know, probably, is a hormone called oxytocin, linked to longevity, linked to better health, linked to happiness, linked to joy. Unlike dopamine, it's a hormone that, dopamine, the more you stimulate it with like a cup of coffee, if you want to get the same high, you need a double shot, or you need another cup of coffee, or you need more sugar. If you are watching a movie or a video game, you need more time, another movie, another video game. You keep ratcheting up the stimuli to trigger that same dopamine reward chemistry. So the more you stimulate the dopamine receptors, the more intensely you need to stimulate to get the same juice. Oxytocin is completely the opposite. Oxytocin is a hormone that once you stimulate it with love and touch and bonding and caring for others, you make more and more of it. The more that you love, the more oxytocin that you make. And the more that you give, the more oxytocin that you make. There's no limit, it seems, according to the science, to how much oxytocin that you can make. And it's directly linked to so many wonderful benefits. In addition to, we talked about, you know, loving and caring and writing letters to loved ones, lowers your cholesterol, lowers your blood pressure, makes you live longer, you know, emoting and writing down what you feel, sharing what you feel. All of those are ways of producing oxytocin. It's sort of amazing. They did studies where when people give and care for another eudaimonically, which is a word that means without any expectation to get anything in return, or you give with a little bit of expectation to get some reward in return. Still both giving in a really nice way, one with a little bit of a hook, and one, you know, I love the old saying, it says, I love you, honey, or someone, but it's no concern of yours, which means I love you, but I don't really need you to love me back. I have fallen in love with this thing inside of me called love, and I love loving you, and that's good enough for me. It's good. You don't need to love me back. You can, but that's not what I'm getting excited about here. So I love you, but it's no concern of yours. That's a eudaimonic kind of a thing. I love and I give carefully. This was the whole point of, if you read, you know, one of the Ayurvedic books called the Bhagavad Gita, which is about a battle between cousins and one of this group of cousins sort of stole the whole kingdom, and they were going to take it down basically, and these good cousins were sort of fighting for righteousness, and the whole point of the book was to not be attached to the fruits of your actions and to enjoy the process of what you do. And that's what we're talking about, is to begin to find your passion and to enjoy the process. So when they give eudaimonically care, it actually had an effect all the way down to the genetic level, literally changed the expression of the genes. That's deep. But when they gave it a little bit of a hook, just that little bit, and no one knew who had the hook and who didn't, there was no effect on the genetic level. So powerful is the body. Sensitive is the body. So aware of every little subtle influence is what Ayurveda said thousands of years ago, and we're just beginning to understand that now. Epigenetically, we know that, which means that changing the genes from the outside in, right? That means that when you watch a scary movie or a violent movie or the news, which is extremely violent or negative, or fear-based, then that epigenetically, not only, and this is all good science, does it affect and change and alter the microbiology, which does the heavy lifting for every physiological function in your body and counting. But it also changes the genetics of the microbes in your gut, who, what's called horizontal or laterally transfer that genetic information through the intestinal wall into the genes inside of you. This is sort of crazy, but it's sort of logically what the body does, right? You have all these little bugs, which are multiplying every 10 minutes, millions and millions of times for millions of years, that are super aware of the environment, and they're kind of morphing based on that awareness. And that's how they stay alive, because they weren't aware it was the changing environment. There's some pesticide being used out there. That information, whether you eat organic or not, has already entered into the microbes on the plant that got sprayed, mutated those microbes, you ingested it, that mutation was transferred to the bugs inside your intestinal tract, and again horizontally transferred into the genetic information inside of you. So now you know, your body knows genetically what to start to prepare for. If it starts getting that message on a regular basis, the body genetically adapts to this environment. That's literally why we're here, because of that information. So really powerful information about how important it is. And then, of course, what that tells you is how important is the intestinal skin to make sure that skin is a healthy and protective barrier, so not too much of this crazy toxic stuff gets through your intestinal wall and causes a host of imbalances and symptoms, which, you know, is a whole nother story. And I wrote an article once called The Most Important Half Inch in Your Body, and it's really that the relationship between the villi on the inside and the lymph on the outside, and that's where it all happens. You take all that little villi in your gut, flatten it out. It's as big as a tennis court. Literally, as what's inside of you flattened out in your intestinal tract is as big as a tennis court, which is, you know, fairly large. And the reason why we have all that is because it's so important for our survival to have that much surface area, which is our ability to become aware, change, and adapt to the outside world. Okay. The input to that skin of your intestinal tract and the microbes is not only pesticides and preservatives and things. It's what you think and what you say and the joy that you have, the happiness that you carry. That has an impact on you as well. So that's kind of the cool thing about harnessing happiness is, like, I think becoming aware of how this whole thing works is pretty powerful. So how do we balance dopamine and oxytocin? How do we get this coexistence of opposites, reward chemistry and calm chemistry? Well, one of the ways, I wrote an article once called What is Your Emotional Body Type? And it's a questionnaire that you take, and I invite you all to do that. It's pretty cool. And it asks you, you know, how much of your behavior is what we call sattvic, which means that you're naturally loving, giving, joyful, and kind, and you're content, completely content on your own. That's sort of like, you know, the sattvic kind of oxytocin-based chemistry. And then there's behaviors that are what we call rajasic, stimulating, sometimes overstimulating, you know, greed and anger and you know, excessive behaviors are all what we call rajasic, to stimulate ourselves to get happiness. Eating a lot, lots of coffee, lots of sugar, lots of candy, lots of stimulating activities, overexercise, overdo yoga, all these things can be rajasic, even though the intention was maybe to be what we call sattvic. And that's a dopamine reward chemistry, really stimulating. And not to say that any of these are bad. This is just the nature of humans. We have the sattva, the calm. We have the stimulation, the eye of the hurricane. But if we overstimulate, we trigger another mental body type, emotional type called Thomas or Thomastic behavior, where people start to withdraw, retreat, check out. They become too overstimulated, exhausted, depleted. So they just sort of want to retreat to hide and recover and recoup. And as a result, become emotionally unavailable, too old to change kind of a thing, and too worn out to be happy again. And this is a dangerous place to go. People find themselves using drugs and alcohol, and marijuana is great because marijuana, you know, is one of the things we legalize for pain. And pain, unfortunately, is sometimes the pain of not getting the reward, the pain of never getting satisfied, puts us into this tamasic cocoon protective box. But to get out of that protective box, we have to go through the pain. And that's something that we don't do very well in our culture, right? We're all told that you know, oh, you know, you're a little bit depressed, your girlfriend broke up with you, so you go on antibiotics. I got dumped regularly and never went on antidepressants, rather. I just had to suck it up, you know, and deal with it and cry and stuff. And the thing is that that's good for us, is to go through that pain. You know, heard all these very successful people saying, if it wasn't for all my failures, I wouldn't have been a success. Yes, those are absolute Vedic rules for success, but more importantly, for happiness, is we must be willing to go through the pain. There's an old saying that the pain and the fear are directly across from the bliss. And the reason for the pain and the fear is to get your attention. So you can go to the pain, through the pain, access who you are, and then let who you really are out. Because otherwise, if you don't go through the pain, maybe you're just going to get satisfied with just the way things are, the status quo. You know, I don't have the most beautiful house on the street, but it's good enough. And we sort of begin to settle, as opposed to taking a look at becoming more aware and more aware of the protective emotional patterns we created as young children to navigate our crazy childhood to be safe and secure. What personality did you create? Did you become a class clown, a straight-A student? Who did you create to become safe and secure in your life? Who did you create? And are you still projecting that personality on the screen today as an adult? Are you still a control freak? Are you a straight-A student? Are you a perfectionist? Do you stress out if someone's coming to your house because you want it to be clean and that's what people would think of you, and you're super worried about what people think of you? This is a big thing. We spend how much energy worrying about what people think of us? And we spend so much time trying to create some image that they will like. And this isn't happiness. If they like you, you're happy for like 5 minutes, and then you want them to like you even more. Or then you have to go see them again and continue to hold up this sort of facade of perfection so they continue to like you. Otherwise, they're going to not like you if they ever see the real you, right? It would be terrible. But you got to remember, this is just that childlike behavioral pattern of needing to be approved of, right? Carried into an adult life. And we never went through the rite of passage to free ourselves. Like the mama leopard says, okay, little baby, I'm going north, you're going south, I'll see you in the next life maybe, but it's over, I'm not watching over anymore. You're on your own. And we haven't done that. We haven't set ourselves free from the need of approval. And this is what the whole thing about Ayurveda is all about, is to set yourself free from the need of approval. So think about it for a second. How much energy, what are the things that you do at home to get ready, to prepare, to go out into the world so people like you, approve of you, think that you're maybe something different than you want? How much energy goes into that? When you created this young pattern of behavior as a young child, you project it on the screen as an adult, what part of that personality that you created as a young kid is still serving you today? And what part of that personality that you created as a young kid isn't serving you today? Then how can you break those patterns? And in the Vedic texts, in Ayurveda, they actually tell you how to do that. And it's with four words. They say that first you must establish awareness, called being, establish a being or awareness, or that I like to call it the eye of the hurricane. Then they say you must perform action. So it's four words. Actually, in Sanskrit, it's yogastha kuru kamani. Establish being, perform action. Pull back the bow, Nothing's going to happen until you let the thing go, right? So it's all about pulling back the bow, becoming silent, and then releasing that with action and accuracy based on you versus based on what you think that they want. You got to remember, everybody is hardwired the same way. Everybody wants everybody else to love them. Like, I really want you to like me, right? So I'm doing everything I can to make you like me, right? And you want me to like you. So you're going to do everything you can, if we were here together, for me to like you, okay? So I'm doing you and you're doing me. Like, when do we get to do me? When do I get to do me? I sometimes a lifetime can go by and I never get to do me. So the idea is that we spend all of our time trying to get them to like us, and they're just trying to get you to like them. So what's really interesting is, and here's the cool part, and I couldn't have told you this 5 years ago because there wasn't the science to prove this. The nature of the human body is love. The nature of the human body is more oxytocin-based than dopamine-based. That's the essence of us. Yes, we have reward chemistry. It keeps us alive, survival. We have the ability to be violent, keeps us alive and survive. But that's not who we are. That's something that we can do in order to survive. But our essence, according to the 90, and here's all the science, 90% of your microbes thrive in a loving, giving, joyful, kind environment. The microbes disappear in stressful, violent environment. We know that when you love and give and care eudaimonically, right, without attachment, it changes your genetic code. We know that when you meditate and love and give and care at a deep level, it actually lengthens your telomeres by 30% in one study and 40% in another. Which means that the little caps on your chromosomes that are linked to longevity and aging, or lack of aging, lengthen when you actually support the body in a stressful environment. Epigenetically, what you see, what you hear, what you taste, what you smell, what you touch, all of those, if they're positive influences, produce oxytocin, longevity, optimal health, and they support the notion that we are, in essence, love. So I couldn't say this before, that our essence is naturally love. So when I say that instead of us waiting to be loved by you and doing all this crazy stuff to get you to like me, what if I just did me? Because the me that I'm really talking about is not the me that wants you to like me, because that's just a personality trait I had to create as a young child to be safe and secure and navigate my childhood for survival of the species, but my true essence is love. So if I just acted on that, I would be joyful. I'd be completely content. I wouldn't need you to love me back. I love you, but it's no concern of yours. I've fallen in love with this crazy thing called love. Also, it can be in the form of compassion, where you really have compassion for someone. Let me give you an example. If someone throws a dart, an emotional dart at you, and it hurts, right? So you have three options. You can either throw a dart back, which will probably make you feel good for a minute. You could abandon them and run away because your mom said, turn the other cheek, and if someone hurts you, don't hurt them back, just leave. Or you can realize that the reason why they threw a dart at you in the first place was because they were hurt. And if you throw a dart back at a hurt person, chances are you can expect another dart. If you run away from a person because they're hurt, they're only going to hurt them worse because you just abandoned them, right? So none of that is, first of all, doing you. Both of those, throwing a dart back at that person and running away from that person, was you reacting to them, not doing you. Remember, your essence is love, joy, kind, oxytocin-based, right? So if you act on compassion and understand why the person threw the dart and go, they threw a dart at me because they were hurt. And if I throw a dart back, it's only going to make them contract and retreat more and probably project more of their protective behavior onto the screen. For example, a rose, for example, I have no idea if this is really true, but I'm guessing that billions of years ago when the roses first evolved, they didn't have thorns. But they got trampled a lot and eaten a lot. Everybody loved them. They were tasty and they got trampled. And one day, one of the roses decided that if I grew some thorns here, maybe they would stop trampling us. And maybe they wouldn't really notice we have thorns. And turned out that we did notice, but the roses stopped getting trampled. And as a result, people who are trampled a lot, they tend to create a personality that can be a little thorny and not be so wonderful. Even though we're hardwired to want people to love us, thorny behavior is an extreme version of protection. So a lot of people project that on the screen as their means of safety and survival, which isn't, you know, our best version of ourselves, but it's sometimes absolutely better to be safe than sorry. So if you realize with compassion why they would have thrown a dart at you, and maybe you understand that their parents were abusive or whatever the story was, then you have understanding and compassion for why they did what they did. Then you can begin to not react based on their dart, but act based on your truth. And this is the key. And this is why I think writing love letters are so beautiful, because when you write a love letter, you write a love letter based on how you truly feel. And when you write a love letter based on how you truly feel, you let a piece of you out. Changes your blood pressure, changes your cholesterol, changes everything, because you take a risk to be you. This is the roadmap. The road less traveled, but definitely the roadmap to happiness and to joyfulness. In Ayurveda, they describe this as these what are called sheaths, these koshas. And the first sheath, the essence of us, is called the Ananda Maya Kosha, which is the bliss sheath. That, according to Ayurveda, is who we are. It's this big ball of bliss. Let's call it the sun, okay? And that's our joy, okay? The whole reason that Ayurveda exists is to let that joy out, harness happiness. That's the whole point of Ayurveda, okay? Now, when you're born, theoretically, we have this joyful, happy-go-lucky nature. In the first 6 years of life, we create a lot of protective patterns based on the need of approval and my mom and dad to love us and care for me and siblings and all this crazy stuff. In those first 6 years of life, we create what are called unconscious behaviors. And as an adult, this is crazy, but those unconscious behaviors make up 95% of the things we think and do and say. So think about that. 95% of what you think and do and say is created from the impressions that you experienced in the first 6 years of life. They're all unconscious. So Ayurveda was pretty cool. It said, you know what, this is crazy. We walk around unconscious. How can we become conscious? That's the whole point. How can we become conscious? Another word of conscious is joyful, because that's our essence. That's our nature. That's who we are. So that's what we're after here. How to harness happiness is how to become conscious. And that's what we're trying to do here. So in this, of course, the reward chemistry is sort of how we got unconscious, and we continue to be unconscious, so we're still doing the same dumb stuff again and again and again. And when they say establish being, become more aware, and then perform action, what we're really talking about is establishing being, pulling back the bow, and then releasing it based on your truth. But you must act. You can't just do nothing. You must lay down. See, we have neural pavement in our brain, four lanes with lights on them and highways, super highways, that make us think and do the same dumb stuff again and again and again, protective patterns of behavior, old emotional stressors, molecules of emotion stuck in our fat, stuck in our brain, stuck in our spine, stuck in our gut, ready to go, remotely ready to respond to any stress in the same old protective pattern, all based on reward chemistry, survival base, become safe and secure at any cost. That is a survival version of us. There's another version of us that has also evolved, that has allowed us to evolve in a higher way, in a feeling way, in a sentient way. And that is this ability to be more loving and more joyful and more kind. So this survival chemistry is just a part of us. So the action steps must be based on the truth. You have to lay down new neural pavement in your brain based on your true nature, your loving nature, your oxytocin nature, your joyful nature, your kindness, your compassion, your care for others. That is why we're here as a species, because we have that ability. If it was just the violent part or the reward part, we probably would have knocked each other out a long time ago. But we have this other thing, which is truly now, you know, pretty well documented to be who we really are. So the action steps to establish awareness and perform action must be based on love and joy and kind. And I talk about that as random acts of kindness. You're looking for ways to express joy. You're looking for ways. And there's so many studies, and when people actually say nice things to people and give more love to people just because they can, that it changes their health index and it changes the person's health index that they actually loved or cared for or were kind to. Even like in a Starbucks, talking and giving a little bit of attention to the barista or a little bit of kindness to someone, you know, at the grocery counter when you're checking out at Walmart. Doesn't take much, but just to reach out and open the petals of your flower and give a little sunlight. The sun, one of my favorite analogies, it doesn't care if you kill its cattle or chop down its trees or doesn't care if the flowers blossom. It just does its thing and everything happens automatically. And there's an old saying in Ayurveda that says, do less and accomplish more. Do less and accomplish more means live in sync with the natural flow of life, the seasons, the cycles, be in harmony with nature. And there's another saying that says, do nothing and accomplish everything, which I love, right? You're going to spend, I know I will, spend the rest of my life trying to figure that out. Do nothing and accomplish everything means to actually be like the sun and just sit there and do nothing and accomplish everything. Everything that we think and do and say came from the sun. No sun, none of this happens. You know? And the sun has the moon too and the rest of the planets, and not a lot's happening on the moon. I mean, it's probably pretty embarrassed about the moon, really. But it just keeps doing its thing. It's not affected by the outcome. It's not affected by the fruits of its actions. And this is I call it the game of life. You can play. When you play, you're happy. So begin to play with looking for the things that are right versus the things that are wrong. Look for opportunities to give love, express love, care for someone. Do you love your parents? Do you act on that? Do you tell them that you love them? Or do you let their crazy behavior, because they want to be, because they're so needy, they want you to love them so bad that pushes you away and you have a hard time loving them. So now you're doing them, right? You're not doing you. What would you lose if you just did them? I had a guy tell me once, he goes, wait a minute, you want me to love my parents, my mother? And I go, well, sure, why not? You do love her. And he goes, yeah, I love her. But if I love her like you want me to love her, like tell her I love her all the time, she'll move in with me. And I said, wait a minute. I said, maybe if you just love her, she'll feel loved and she'll stop clamoring to be next to you all the time because she doesn't feel loved by you. And he goes, you don't know my mother. See, the point is that we really can only effectively do us. But our mind has this protective kind of shield around us because it's afraid that if I did me, they wouldn't like me. Because the reward, chemistry, need for approval is still alive and well. This is the game of life. And you play the game by laying down new neural pavement in your brain. Laying down new, love your wife. Tell her how beautiful she is. Send a little note, how wonderful, how lucky you are, how grateful you are. Tell your kids how awesome they are. You know, not too much though, because you don't want to spoil them. But you want to tell them you love them. They need to know for sure that you love them. Tell the people that you work with that you care for them. Do nice things for them. And you'll begin to, and you might say, I don't have the energy to love. Yes, you do, because this is the energy that doesn't require energy. Because when the sun is just doing its thing, it's you doing you, does not require energy. But the energy that is exhausting is when I feel like I have to be this way for this person, and this way for that person, and this way for that person. There is no happiness there at all. There is no joy there at all. Just flat out exhaustion until you're absolutely depleted, living in this tamasic cocoon of protection because you've exhausted all your reserves, trying to get them to like you, trying to be a success, trying to get some traction in your life, and you never did it. And you never got there. And now you're just left exhausted. We can do better than that. Because if you just start with baby steps, it doesn't take much. A little baby step of, hey, thank you. What a beautiful dress you're wearing today. You look beautiful today. Just want to tell you I love you. Just called to tell you I love you. Hey, I just want to send you a note. Hope you have a great day. Simple, simple things that can begin to harness happiness, which is your essence, which is your nature, which is deeply inside of you. So that in short, is really what Ayurveda is. Yoga, breathing, meditation techniques. These are all tools of awareness. Unfortunately, a lot of those tools don't give you the other half of the equation, the perform action part. This is the most important part. We have half the equation alive and well in America. Yoga, breathe, meditate, all these things. But not the action part. And the action part is to lay down new neural pavement. When I wrote my meditation course called the Transformation Awareness Technique, which is 6 meditations from really easy to more advanced, every week you get a new one. I didn't write it because we need another meditation course on the planet. I wrote it because I find people are not successful with their meditation. They don't do it. They start, they either do it for a little while and quit, or they can't stick with it, or they don't feel like they were actually able to really dive down and get that peace and calm. So I created a meditation that is sort of foolproof that anybody can take these steps. But each step is an awareness step, which requires an action step to finish the job. Because if you don't establish being, awareness, and then act, you didn't do anything. There are benefits just by becoming aware, but there is huge potential benefits that we haven't even begun to talk about that is there when you perform action. And that is why I wrote the Transformation Awareness Technique, which is all about meditate, act. And I give you specific action steps along the way to transform your life from needing to be loved and approved of to being love and being your true nature. And having the courage to open up the delicate petals of your flower and let who you really are, your most joyful, most happy version of yourself, out. So thank you. I have questions I want to answer. If you guys want to call in, I'd love to talk to you. Please push *2 for questions, and I'll also look and see if we can answer some questions that might be here as well. So here's a question from Sydney, Australia, I imagine. How to comfort and help a friend or patient who has deep depression, even tending towards suicide? A lot of people deal with someone like this, and it's very hard to correct their intellect because it may be taken over by demons, rakshasas, negative. And they also realize that it's not them. Even people who have a good diet, doing a daily routine, does Ayurvedic treatments affect them? And I think we have someone who's gone, like we said, from sattva to rajas stimulation to this tamasic world. And we stay in this cocoon. It can be very, very depressing, even suicidal. From here, for some people, it feels like I'd rather sort of check out than have to go through, you know, this pain to get back to rajasic and to find some peace and calm and some joy that exists there in my sattvic place. So it's very, very challenging for people. But the thing is, what happens within this tamasic world, and this is what Ayurveda is so beautiful about, it rebuilds the reserves, pays back the exhaustive debt, gives the body the energy so it has the ability to kind of move through these some of the pain and discomfort and find their way back to a life that is more joy-based and sattvic-based. Absolutely possible. But again, it requires action. And the action can't just be, you know, even, you know, doing an Abhyanga or a massage or some Ayurvedic technique. It really does require actions in terms of communication. When you talk about oxytocin, for example, you're really talking about, that's the communication hormone. You know, dopamine is a reward chemistry. I can get that by hitting a baseball over a fence or hitting a golf ball well or going shopping. I mean, people don't have to be involved in that hormone. And a lot of times, sort of why our culture is going towards being more kind of loner-based and doing things on their own and less community-based, which unfortunately is not good because that's who we are. Because oxytocin requires people to love, to touch, to care, to give, to joy. It requires that. So that community is really critically important. So the action steps must require people that you love, that you have a relationship with. So, but baby steps are all that's needed, but they do require people. Another question from Vancouver. I recently sustained an injury that has left me with trauma. What is the best way to move through this trauma from the body so that my true healing of my injury and my rehab can begin? Thank you, Dr. John. This is interesting, and so many books have been written about the mental and emotional component of trauma, that is both mental and emotional, but also how it can affect us physically, and how pain in the body, again, is just an opportunity to go through. So the rules are, the pain and the fear are right there, and if we can go to that pain and through that pain, we can access it. Not to say that you shouldn't do physical therapy, you shouldn't go see your good chiropractor, you shouldn't go get massage and take care of your body as structurally as possible. But there's another component, a stone left unturned in most cases, where we can look at, you know, where can I love? Who can I love? What relationship do I have that's strained? Am I loving my husband, my spouse, as fully as I could? Or do I hold back and retreat? How can I give and care to my kids better, to my love? Even though I'm in pain, how can I say some nice things? And that's, you know, for sure a bit of a challenge, but not insurmountable. If you, you know, you can still find ways to begin to access that love. And it doesn't have to be saying, like, love my pain, I love my knee even though it's killing me. It doesn't have to be like that. Although you might find that by putting joy out, your essence, and harnessing that happiness that you have, you may find that this knee is actually getting better. And I've had that happen so many times. I can't tell you my book, Body, Mind, Sport, but people just started breathing through their nose and walking and getting prana and life force in the body. They created awareness. And once this is the whole point of Ayurveda and yoga, is yoga makes the density of the body less. Breathing drives that prana life force into the cells. The body becomes more aware. Aware of what? Aware of the difference between the truth and the non-truth. The love, the joy, and the pain. And then once you become aware of that, the body's going to naturally choose the pain. It sort of happens spontaneously, but it does require us to engage, to lay down new neural pavement. Pretty neat, actually, neat stuff. From Toronto, I have recently been diagnosed with PTSD. Do you have any Ayurvedic recommendations? Absolutely. Herbs like bacopa is a brain-derived neurotropic factor. Builds brain cells, gives your body, supports depression. Outperformed Prozac in one study. Another herb, turmeric, classic herb. The whole herb, not the extract, the whole herb of turmeric actually has certain aromatics that don't exist in the extracts and don't have the microbes that in the extracts. So turmeric is really important. Again, a brain-derived neurotropic factor, very powerful for mood stability. Herbs like ashwagandha, powerful rejuvenative adaptogen, helps your body adapt to stress. My point here is we first just pay back the exhaustive debt, put the gas back into your tank, so then you have the energy to be calm, right? So if you are just, and I can't imagine, you know, post-traumatic stress, there's a level of depletion and exhaustion. You got to pay back that debt. And once you have a little gas in your tank, then you can do some of the things that I've said. So those are things, bacopa, ashwagandha, turmeric, Brahmi, which is called Centella Asiatica, all powerful herbs to really deeply rejuvenate. And then from there, you can make some really powerful changes. From Marietta, Georgia, how can you possibly teach very young children to act with compassion instead of reacting when they are hurt without compromising their safety? I really believe, and I've got six kids, that kids model behavior. That's a fact. I've watched that for a long time. And if you model that behavior, they're going to do that. You know what I mean? And yeah, there might be a time where your kid gets into a spout and, you know, and throws something. But if they throw a rock back at a kid who threw a rock at them, they're probably going to come to you crying because they just threw a rock at a kid. It's not going to make them feel good. And you know, so I think it's important for us to model behavior for our kids, which are loving, joyful, and kind, is the first thing that we do, and not judging and reacting to others. And then also, when you do have a situation where they throw a rock, and you know, and even though it may have been, you know, validated that they did that in their own self-defense, they still don't feel good. And pointing that out and saying, you know, that doesn't make you feel good to throw that rock back, you know, but maybe it was required for your own safety, I understand that, but explain that to them. So they walk away really understanding that there's two sides to this coin. There's, you know, the survival side, but there's also the love, which is the more truthful and the essence of who we are. Keep reminding your kids. And how they really get to know that, kids-wise, I'm a big believer in this. They have to be absolutely convinced that love is unconditional. That what they, their attention and the love they get from mom and dad can't be conditional based on approval. Can't be conditional based on getting straight A's. It has to be something that they get because it's the essence of you expressing and communicating with the essence of them. It's a true love thing. And nothing touches that bond of love and trust and safety. If that's in place, your kids are going to be fine. But sometimes we have to do a little, backtracking to get that, because a lot of us have been, you know, built and grew up with conditions, and we unknowingly set them up for our kids, and it's very, very hard to do. But having the awareness of it is a great game to play. It's a game of life. Let's see what else we have here. I'm going to go over and listen to some phone calls if we have any on the phone. And press star 2 for that if you like. If anybody has any questions, just push star 2. And one more question is, how do you approach a loved one who is not improving, who's not interested in improving the flat mood that he's usually in? Someone that does not accept to be touched, does not accept, know how to laugh. How do you deal with that? I love that question. You know, and there's a big answer to that. I oftentimes say we're married to a rock or a flower. And if the sun shines on a rock, this rock just takes the sun and takes it and takes it and takes it and takes it, and nothing really happens. The rock gets warm, but then nothing happens. The sun shines light on the flower feels safe enough to open the petals of its flower and blossom and become itself fully. And then the flower will even follow you around the sky, actually, you know, and have a relationship with you. If you have given yourself fully to the rock, and the rock does nothing with it, the sun doesn't stop shining on the rock. It continues to love the rock forever. But it has a relationship with the flower. And it might be time for you to realize that I don't have a relationship, an interactive relationship with the rock. I love the rock. The rock's broken. I did everything I can. I gave myself fully to that rock, but it really didn't really happen. So actually, it might be time for you to move on. And then through that experience of realizing I didn't just shut them off and make them wrong and throw them out, I've actually experienced that my nature is love, and I'm going to continue to love that person. But I might have a relationship with a flower someday. The tricky part of that is that, did you really give yourself fully to the rock? Did you give yourself fully to the rock with the expectation that the rock would change? That's a hook. That's not what we call eudaimonic love. That's a hook with an expectation. And they feel that expectation. They will feel broken. They will feel like you're loving me with the expectation that I change because you don't like the way I am. It doesn't work. So we have to sort of go back to the drawing board and write a love letter to this person and identify what it is you truly love about this man. And then you have to look at those things and read those things on your list and see if they make you feel expanded. Do they make you feel good? If the things that you love about this person make you feel good, then act on them. And if you act on them, then you act random acts of kindness, loving, giving, joy, happiness. Express happiness, express joy to this person based on what you know is the truth of the relationship that you wrote down and it made you feel good. If you love and give with an expectation for them to change their ways that you don't think are good for him or for you, they're going to feel it. They're going to feel broken. They're going to feel like all you do is fix me, fix me, fix me. I'm broken, broken, broken. And they're going to retreat into their cave and they're going to be untouchable, unapproachable, inaccessible, and you won't be able to reach them. So we want to start to, you know, give some love to them. it's weird, and I don't know if I should even say this, but I wrote another article called I forget the name of it. I think it was something called not what, what your emotional footprint is. Yes, it was. It was called What is Your Emotional Footprint? And it was an idea that you walk into a garden, and like a Disney garden, and if you're clomping into the garden, stepping on plants and stuff, all the flowers are going, whoa, get out of here. This guy's crazy. He's trampling everything. Or when you walk into the garden, are the flowers reaching out, trying to greet you because they feel safe in your presence? What is your emotional footprint when you walk into a room? Do people feel safe around you? If you don't say anything, they're not even going to know who you are. So how can they feel safe, right? So you walk in the room, don't say anything. You want everybody to like you, but they don't know if you're safe to like. So they stay in their retreat, and everybody just stays retreated, and you don't feel safe and secure. But when you walk into the room and you give of yourself, take a risk to say something nice to someone, to love them because it's your nature to do that, then all of a sudden people feel safe in your presence. If someone is throwing a dart at you, or being mean to you, or withdrawn from you, you might take a minute to realize that you may have done something to hurt them emotionally that made them retreat and protect 2-3 days prior, longer. And that what you're actually seeing now is a reflection of the impression that you created in that garden, and now every time you walk in the garden, they all run away. Because they're used to, that's what you did 2-3-4 days ago. So before we just judge them and go, God, why are they being so mean? They're crazy. You might want to take a minute and go, God, is it possible that I created that? And if so, and it's very possible, by the way, then I'm going to use that feedback to help me become more aware of how I can be more myself in this situation and not react to my old emotional patterns of protection and react to the need for them to like me, you know, put on this show, which sometimes has some thorns on it. Thank you all for listening. Please join me next month when we talk about how to get rid of your aches and pains.